You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. The State Department investigates an alleged breach. The FCC looks at regulating connected vehicles. A big tech consortium hopes to mitigate AI-related job losses. Google aims to thwart cookie thieves. Survey Llama exposes sensitive info of over 4 million users. Omni Hotels and Resorts is recovering from a cyber attack. A National Cancer Treatment Center suffers a breach. How cyber is approached on both sides of the pond. In our Industry Voices segment, George Jones, CISO at Critical Start, discusses strategies for maximizing cybersecurity investments to achieve optimal risk reduction and playing the identity theft long game. It's Thursday, April 4th, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. Thank you for joining us here today. It is great to have you with us. The U.S. State Department has launched an investigation after a hacker group, Intel Broker, claimed to have leaked documents from Acuity, a technology consulting firm serving federal security customers. Intel Broker alleges these documents contain sensitive information from the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance, including personal details of government, military, and Pentagon employees. Acuity, with nearly 400 employees and over $100 million in annual revenue, specializes in services like DevSecOps and cybersecurity for national security customers. As for the hacker group Intel Broker, this isn't their first major breach. Their history includes unauthorized access to data from various U.S. government agencies and notable companies like Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. The State Department has confirmed it's looking into the breach but has not disclosed specifics, citing security concerns. The overlap of leaked data in previous Intel Broker disclosures hints at a potential connection between this and earlier incidents. There is a clash brewing between automakers and the FCC over whether connected vehicles should be regulated as telecom entities. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel questioned if cars' technological advancements necessitate new regulations. This inquiry aligns with increasing concerns over connected cars' data practices, including law enforcement's use of such data without consent, issues like stalking, and automakers selling information to third parties. Rosenworcel's focus is on whether automakers qualify as mobile virtual network operators, MVNOs, potentially subjecting them to stricter data handling and sharing rules. Most automakers deny operating as MVNOs, but the debate raises critical questions about privacy, transparency, and regulatory authority in the era of connected vehicles. Artificial intelligence's role in the workforce presents a dual narrative. On the one hand, companies like UPS and IBM are adjusting their workforce strategies due to AI's growing capabilities, with some roles being cut or hiring paused in anticipation of automation. On the other hand, a notable consortium led by Cisco, including tech giants like Google and Microsoft, is focusing on mitigating AI-related job losses through reskilling and upskilling initiatives. This AI-enabled ICT workforce consortium aims to assess AI's impact on job roles within the ICT industry, providing training recommendations and connecting businesses with skilled workers. Despite these efforts, skepticism remains regarding the actual availability of AI roles in the future, as demand appears to be declining. The tech industry's challenge lies in delivering tangible solutions and actions beyond mere promises to address the evolving landscape of work in the AI era. Meanwhile, Amazon announced yesterday it would cut hundreds of jobs within its cloud computing division, AWS, aligning with a strategic realignment. This decision affects the technology team for physical stores, following Amazon's choice to abandon its Just Walk Out technology in U.S. groceries. Further job reductions span AWS's sales, marketing, and global service teams, particularly impacting AWS training, certification programs, and sales operations. These layoffs are part of Amazon's broader strategy to refocus resources and drive innovation, despite recent layoffs across Prime Video, MGM Studios, Twitch, and Audible. Google is developing a security feature called Device-Bound Session Credentials, DBSC, to counter hackers who bypass multi-factor authentication by stealing authentication cookies. This feature binds cookies cryptographically to a user's device, making them useless on a hacker's computer. Leveraging trusted platform modules in computers for storing encryption keys, DBSC aims to make stolen cookies valueless for account hijacking. Google proposes this mechanism as a web standard, envisioning an API for servers to initiate at each browsing session start, enhancing security without compromising privacy. With interest from identity providers Okta and Microsoft's Edge browser, Google seeks to convince other major browser makers to adopt this approach, potentially establishing a new standard in web security. Google has addressed two critical vulnerabilities in its Pixel devices, exploited by forensic firms to bypass PIN security and access device data. These 0 days, involving the bootloader and firmware, were distinctively patched in Pixel's April 2024 update, separate from the general Android patches due to Pixel's unique hardware and features. Graphene OS researchers who discovered the exploitation highlighted that Google's fixes aim to block unauthorized access to memory and factory reset bypasses, though they note that the latter fix may be partially effective. Survey Llama, an online survey platform rewarding users for participation, experienced a data breach in February of 2024, exposing 4.4 million users' sensitive information. Have I Been Pwned reported the breach, which included dates of birth, email, and physical addresses, full names, passwords, phone numbers, and IP addresses. Survey Llama, owned by Globe Media, confirmed the incident and notified affected users. Despite passwords being hashed, vulnerabilities exist, and users are advised to change their passwords immediately. Omni Hotels and Resorts is dealing with the aftermath of a cyber attack that led to a national IT outage, disrupting its operations. The attack, identified on March 29th, prompted Omni to shut down its systems to contain the breach. Most systems have been restored, thanks to efforts from their IT teams and a cybersecurity response unit. The nature of the attack has not been officially confirmed by Omni, but sources suggest it was a ransomware incident. The company is currently restoring encrypted servers from backups, with no ransomware group yet claiming the attack. The cyber attack has impacted reservation and payment systems, but all Omni locations continue to operate, accepting guests while manually restoring systems. This incident follows a 2016 breach where malware compromised Omni's point-of-sale systems. City of Hope, a comprehensive cancer center with locations across the U.S., experienced a data breach between September 19th and October 12th of 2023, affecting over 800,000 individuals. Unauthorized access to their systems resulted in the theft of sensitive data, including personal and medical information. Despite no current evidence of identity theft or fraud, the center has taken steps to contain the breach, informed law enforcement, and engaged a cybersecurity firm to enhance system security. Impacted individuals are being offered 2 years of identity monitoring services. Notifications began in December of 2023 with ongoing efforts to identify all affected parties. A piece in GovInfo Security by Cyber Theory's Steve King examines the cybersecurity landscape in the UK and the US and how they diverge due to differences in national security priorities, regulatory environments, and cultural attitudes toward privacy and surveillance. In the UK, King says, the emphasis is on data protection, heavily influenced by EU regulations like GDPR, leading to a stringent compliance culture within cybersecurity. Conversely, the US focuses more on protecting critical infrastructure against espionage and cyberattacks with a fragmented regulatory framework. Cultural attitudes also vary, with the UK displaying a certain acceptance of surveillance for security, whereas the US shows polarization, emphasizing individual freedom and privacy rights. Moreover, the UK and US prioritize different aspects of national security in their cybersecurity strategies. The private sector's role and the approach to career development and education in cybersecurity also differ, reflecting each country's unique approach to combating cyber threats and advancing cybersecurity practices. Coming up after the break, George Jones, Chief Information Security Officer at Critical Start, discusses strategies for maximizing cybersecurity investments to achieve optimal risk reduction. Stay with us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. In today's sponsored Industry Voices segment, my conversation with George Jones, CISO at Critical Start. We're talking about strategies for maximizing cybersecurity investments to achieve optimal risk reduction.
I think that we're at an inflection point where folks are taking a much greater ROI perspective on their investments and finding ways to ensure that they're effectively spending money within their budgets. So we've reached a point in the economy from an economic perspective where money that used to be quote unquote free at incredibly artificially low interest rates is not available anymore. And so organizations, both large and small, have to think about how they manage debt and spend. And so if I can quantify the investments that I'm making from a technology and security perspective are in fact either cash flow neutral or in fact can generate in terms of internal dollars, generate revenue, then those are going to be platforms or implementations that I'm going to look at with a much more kind eye than I might otherwise.
You know, I'm reminded of that old, I suppose you could say old chestnut from the Mad Men advertising days of, you know, the executive would say, I know that half of the money I'm spending on advertising is wasted. The problem is I don't know which half. And I, you know, I wonder if some of that has been at play with folks in cybersecurity of, you know, buying all the tools so that we feel as though we're covered.
I think that's a large part to it is, you know, just almost a spray and pray type mentality where more tools are better. Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing in the marketplace now, and one of the things that I'm looking at is less is better. Because from an ROI perspective, if I can go to a single vendor and get five tools, I have to manage one vendor. I've got one platform. From an ROI perspective, I've got one organization that I have to put through a pretty extensive third-party risk management process. That's one vendor where I know my data is safe and secure. So I don't have to worry about being spread across five different vendors and five different platforms. I can leverage an economy of scale by working with that one vendor and bundling packages and getting a better deal. And so taking an approach like similar to that, and it doesn't even, you know, I pulled the number five out of a hat. It could be three, but the more that I can effectively minimize the number of locations where my data exists and the number of vendors who in any way, shape, or form have access to my data, the more I reduce our attack surface. And so anytime I can do that, then putting that security conscious approach first allows me to operate in a more cost effective manner simply by minimizing the depth and breadth of locations that I have to be concerned about where my data resides.
Can we talk about some of the strategies for coming at that approach? I mean, let's say I'm out there and I'm shopping at these various platforms. How do I evaluate, you know, which features are most important to me and what combination is going to give me the best bang for my buck?
That's a great question. It's very, and that's certainly going to be very dependent upon the nuances of your environment. But a great way to effectively evaluate your cyber risk and make sure that it aligns with your business strategy is to conduct, you know, before you even start looking at what those vendors are, understanding risk assessments on your environment. So you need to conduct comprehensive risk assessments on your environment to understand what your assets are, what your vulnerabilities are, what the threats are, what the potential impact of those threats are. So identifying those critical assets and their vulnerabilities, evaluating potential threats, determining the likelihood and impact of those threats, and then understanding what is your appetite for risk. So if you are incredibly risk averse, then you're going to want a tighter set of controls around your environment. If you're willing to accept more risk because you have faith in the platforms that you have, or you have minimized the exposure to critical parts of your data through any number of technical means, then you may have a larger appetite for risk for specific environments. So understanding how your risk appetite aligns with your business strategy is first before you can really start to wade into the pool of available tools.
What about the balancing the advantage of having a bunch of functionality in one platform, you know, coming from a single provider, balancing that against the potential risk of putting all of your eggs into one security basket?
Well, so there's certainly that, and I think we've learned that through some pretty impactful events that have occurred to specific cybersecurity companies in recent history. But I mean, that's a calculated risk that you take. So I would still stand to the statement that if I do my due diligence and I look at the assessments that the vendor I'm considering has undertaken, and actually read their assessment reports and understand what their risks and vulnerabilities are, and they show me that they have no corrective action plans in place or no significant findings in their attestations from their third-party assessment organizations, then I'm going to have some faith in those organizations and in the fact that organization does what they say they're doing. If in fact they are blatantly misleading in those statements, I don't know that there's a whole lot I can do about that. And I think that's what we saw in the past, was that organizations that we thought were secure were in fact not doing what they said they were doing. If you have one vendor or 10 vendors, I don't know how you protect against that. You know, because at that point it becomes, you fall back into the, well, I need 27 platforms, because if this one fails, I've got one that does the same thing it does to back it up. And then you run into the sprawl that we're trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Once you get a program like this up and running, what are your tips and recommendations for keeping it up and running, for fine-tuning it, for, you know, making sure that it's working the way that you intended?
The key thing from that perspective is, well, I'll step back from that. There are a couple of key things in that. Relationships with your vendor are critical. And so for me, I have typically, depending upon the vendor and what I do with them, and you know, a quarterly business review, sometimes it's semi-annual, but I think having that relationship in place helps me stay in tune with how well that organization is staying ahead of the emerging threats that exist. So I want to make sure that not only am I monitoring my environment continuously to make sure that I stay ahead of emerging threats and zero-day threats and vulnerabilities that exist and occur and update every day, but I want to make sure that my vendors are doing the same thing. And so I do that through regular touch points and through those relationships, and I can have conversations with someone and ask them very direct and very pointed questions about specific things that are occurring. So if I may have a quarterly business review with a vendor, but something, a critical vulnerability comes out that I have concerns about given potential exposure to my environment, I might send my technical account manager an email and say, hey, I just saw this zero-day vulnerability that occurred. What's the impact to me with your tool, or what's the impact to your organization? And start those conversations. So keeping that open channel of communication with your vendors is always critical to making sure that they can stay ahead of emerging threats. Because if your vendor's not ahead of emerging threats, you're not ahead of emerging threats.
What about communicating this approach to, let's say, your board of directors, you know, to the powers that be at an organization, and making sure that they understand that they're on board with this kind of approach of maximizing your ROI?
That involves, again, some regular touch points. So I have monthly calls with investors for our organization. But what I would say the general public should do is have those regular touch points with your investors and with your board, because what those key stakeholders are going to want to understand is, can you quantify the financial benefits that you gain by implementing these initiatives? And can you quantify that relative to the costs that are incurred? So you can achieve that by measuring the reduction in data breach costs, which is a projection, but you know, including that, the avoidance of regulatory fines depending upon your industry, preservation of brand reputation and goodwill with your customers, potential revenue growth because of enhanced customer trust. Something else that I've started to focus on is that ROI, but I include in that ROI cost avoidance as well. So if I avoid 20 extra man hours of managing vendors, or I can say I could have leveraged a 20% reduction by renewing an agreement with a vendor, that's a cost avoidance. You know, I'm not necessarily saving money to the organization because my annual cost might go up 5% because that's the price that the vendor gave me. But I avoided 20% increase. So by default, I've saved the organization money, even though I'm spending more. So focusing on that perspective as well, that's what your board's going to want to see, and what those key stakeholders are going to want to see is, can I show you that I'm saving our organization money by improving our security posture and keeping our employees safe, our customers safe, and our intellectual property safe, and doing so by saving the organization money at the same time. So at the end of the day, it's being able to provide that quantifiable benefit that you gain from the initiative.
That's George Jones, Chief Information Security Officer at Critical Start. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere, Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And finally, in a tale that reads like the plot of a crime thriller, one Matthew David Kearns executed one of the most audacious acts of identity theft, spanning over 3 decades. At 58 years old, Kearns admitted to a series of crimes that not only defrauded financial institutions, but also irrevocably changed the life of William Donald Woods, the unsuspecting victim of this elaborate scheme. After meeting Woods at a hot dog stand in Albuquerque, New Mexico in the late 1980s, Kearns embarked on an elaborate scheme, fully assuming Woods' identity within 2 years. Utilizing forged documents, he secured employment at the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics, amassing over $700,000 over 10 years. The extent of Kearns' deceit included taking out loans, purchasing vehicles, and even entering a marriage under Woods' name. However, the cruelty of his actions was most starkly revealed in 2019, when Woods, then homeless and unaware of the debt accrued in his name, attempted to clear up the confusion at a bank. This led to his arrest and wrongful imprisonment for 428 days, followed by a forced stay in a mental hospital for 147 days, all while Kearns continued his deception. The unraveling of Kieran's fraud began with Woods' complaint to Kieran's employer, leading to a police investigation that used DNA evidence to expose the truth. Kearns now faces up to 32 years in prison. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.